I'm Manila Chan. You are tuned into Modus Operandi. They're putting nukes in space is the latest hyperbole coming from Washington as Moscow tests advanced weaponry capable of navigating low Earth orbit. Today, we'll dig into what all this hype is actually about and find out from a former Soviet-era scientist how Moscow is light years ahead of Washington in the newest space race. All right, let's get into the MO. Believe it or not, the world is working on space laws, modern ones, because a basic blanket treaty was agreed upon back in the 1960s. And with the advancement of both arms and technology and new space-capable nations entering the scene, Washington is ringing the alarms to slow it all down by saying, Russia is readying nukes for space. But just how true a statement is that exactly? To discuss it, we'll bring in a man who is an expert in ballistic arms with the proper technological training in the development of them. Retired Soviet naval officer, now a writer, analyst, and author, Andrei Martyanov. Check out his latest book called Losing Military Supremacy, The Myopia of American Strategic Planning. You can see more of his musings on his blog at smoothiex12.blogspot.com. Andrei, always a pleasure to speak with you. Thank you for joining the program. So first up, Reuters is citing anonymous sources whom they say are from the US, you know, kind of implying persons within the intelligence apparatus that Russians are developing, quote, space-based anti-satellite nuclear weapons, which the Kremlin, they deny and has said is an outright fabrication, and that Moscow has no intention of deploying nuclear weapons in space. Now, straight away, what's your read on that situation?
The same as it is usually my reaction to any so-called intel from Washington, which mostly is fabrication. And we all know the intel on Iraq and intel on everything else. So it is for primarily internal purposes. Some say that it is regarding the situation with those $61 billion in the alleged financial aid to Ukraine. But there is another version of this story, which could be an excuse, because obviously there were declaration of the intentions to establish contact with the Russians immediately to discuss all this horrible thing, is to cover or excuse for basically negotiating where it all ends for the United States after what happened in Ukraine in the last 2 years, and which amounts to a catastrophic defeat of the combined West. So they need to somehow restore some kind of communications on the official level. So that's also one of the versions of this event. So take it for whatever it is, but obviously Russians are sincere when they say nobody wants to put the nuclear weapons in space. And the only thing they could grab onto is the fact that Russia already has a highly developed anti-satellite capabilities, which are ground-based. This we are talking about in this case about S-500, S-550, A-235 Nudol type systems. And of course, they're not upcoming. They are really continuing work on what amounts to the nuclear-powered space tug, which, of course, you know, as any kind of space technology, could be construed as the dual use. But Russians primarily designed this nuclear space tag for the traveling towards Mars and all kind of the deeper space exploration. So that's pretty much it.
We've recently heard Congressman Mike Turner, the Republican chair of the House Intelligence Committee, make some kind of cryptic remarks about these reports as, quote, a serious national security threat, further adding to, you know, the unverified speculation. So I guess my next question is two parts. First, can't something that is anti-satellite simply be a device, we'll call it, that could scramble or damage or just render useless the targeted satellite without actually being an explosive? And then how do we define the term threat, given that these days we say words are violence? I mean, anything the U.S. doesn't like, even a benign satellite in space could be deemed a threat.
First, there is immediately immediate issue. What does it mean, nuclear space satellite? First, you don't have to have satellite to explode nuclear device in space, which gonna damage not only the nearest satellites of the enemy, it can damage your own satellite and create a lot of space garbage. No, we're talking about the technology which exists. It is out there. Both Russia and United States have it, and they call it inspector satellites. Inspector satellites are the satellites which can maneuver at the orbits. They can approach, as Russians did with their recent keyhole satellite of the United States. These inspector satellites can approach the other satellites, and it doesn't have to explode. It can simply spray, for example, the paint, specially designed paint, over the optical zooms, so to speak, of those satellites, rendering them absolutely useless. No explosions are necessary in this particular case. But if it comes down to it, those inspector satellites certainly can and probably do contain some kind of explosives. And then, of course, they can attach themselves to the desired satellite and explode, thus basically damaging or altogether annihilating the satellite which was a target. This technology does exist. Both Russia and United States have it. So the only thing which could be nuclear there is the power source, Russians have been using the nuclear-powered satellite since 1970s. So, it's nothing new in here in this regard. As for intelligence, as I already stated, as you correctly stated, about the threat, so anything which United States doesn't like, it declares threat. But let's be honest, in terms of anti-satellite capabilities, which are ground-based, Russia has a very serious edge over United States in this respect. So, but again, who knows what is this all about in Washington, which is absolutely ungovernable right now. And of course, as I already stated, it could be about the $61 billion, but it could be also some kind of excuse for restoring some official contacts with Russians, then discuss this issue for half a day, and then dedicating the week discussing on how to extricate the United States with at least some modicum of dignity left there. That could be a very serious issue for the United States.
Okay, gotcha. So very similar to nuclear-powered submarines that are currently, we should add, in use by the U.S. Or don't forget the threat that was the Chinese spy balloon. Everything is a threat.
It's preposterous. And again, they are very many. Let's keep in mind that most of the Congress of the United States, it's basically the extension of the American military-industrial complex. And even if we go back to Eisenhower's famous speech on January 5th, 1961, actually the full name of the phenomenon he was describing was not just military-industrial complex. It was military-industrial congressional complex. But as his granddaughter Susan Eisenhower said, the reason he didn't use their full name of this phenomenon and excluded congressional term from the complex was because he had a couple of bills still in the Congress and they needed to pass them. And he knew that if he would use the, as was originally conceived, military-industrial congressional complex, some people in Congress might basically sabotage his bills. And that's the reality of it. And many people make, careers and a lot of money by promoting all kind of the bizarre ideas. They pretend or create threats and when you look at TensorFlow, actually what they achieved so far, the only technological achievement is in their making absolutely ineffective, extremely expensive weapons, which fill the pockets of those who promote them with a lot of cash.
All right, let's entertain for a moment then the concept of nukes in space, as you alluded to earlier. If any hostile satellite were carrying a nuclear warhead that, let's say, shoots down another satellite, the wave of gamma radiation would damage critical subsystems of that target, but it would also damage the systems of that said aggressor state satellites, their allies, even neutral countries. I mean, this would be indiscriminate damage, wouldn't it?
Well, some of it certainly could be, any depending on the range of their radiation and, you know, electromagnetic pulse, which is essentially this impulse, which is the main weapon in case of the detonating of the nuclear device. It can damage not only their near satellites, including your own, it can actually create a serious issue for the ground infrastructure, including your own too, you know, as that was the case in 1962, I believe. They tried this, and there was some really serious situation with the grid in Hawaii, from what I remember. So, yeah, it's not this precise weapon. It's last choice weapon, if you wish, you know. But, yeah, it's not practical.
So, Andre, there is an outer space treaty from back in the Cold War days during the Great Space Race. Resolution 1884, I believe, that back then the Soviet Union signed on to, along with the U.S., that strictly prohibits the use of and the deployment of nukes or WMDs into space. The UNGA unanimously adopted this back in October of 1963. In response to these accusations, Vladimir Putin said point blank that he stands by this agreement, even though this was a Soviet-era agreement, not Russia's, is my understanding, and that he is vehemently opposed to anyone deploying weapons into space. Given America's track record of retractions and withdrawals from numerous international treaties, such as JCPOA, the New START Treaty, so many others, shouldn't the cause for concern be that the U.S. might be the first to deploy such arms and abandon this decades-old treaty?
Oh, absolutely. It goes without saying. Treaties with the United States are not worth the paper they are signed on. And the United States is what is called the agreement and capable nation as of now. I mean, not nation. There, we're talking about the government. So, yeah, United States thinks about itself as the, you know, what, free of any kind of obligations. And it's absolutely possible that they want to, you know, put nuclear weapons there, especially against the background of what is happening right now with Russian both anti-satellite weapons development, and of course Russia expanding her constellation, not only in terms of military satellites, but what comes through their what is called Sphera project, which dramatically increases their Russian satellite constellation. And obviously, as any satellite, I mean, you can use it, it can be dual use. And the United States doesn't like to be in this position. So will they place their nuke in space? Most likely, especially considering the total irrationality and desperation of current administration with what is happening all around them. So yeah, sure. And somebody needs, again, somebody needs to make a lot of money. And a lot of money goes to all those Raytheons, what have you, you know, who create all those satellites or whatever the nuke they will place in the orbit if they do it. But I'm sure that the probability of happening of this is fairly high.
All right, coming up next, with the strong possibility that Donald Trump may return to power in Washington, could we see a new expansion of his fledgling military arm now called Space Force? We'll discuss it when we return with Andre Martianov. Sit tight. The MO will be right back.
Hi, Hello and welcome to Crosstalk Bullhorns. Here we discuss some real news.
We need to counter the Russian state-controlled narrative.
Als Teil der Sanktionen gegen Russland gehen die westlichen Länder gegen russische Auslandssender vor.
Mais écoutez, monsieur, c'est pas à vous de décider de qui est journaliste ou pas dans ce pays. On est en France, quoi. C'est pas possible.
We will ban in the European Union the Kremlin's media machine. The state-owned Russia Today and Sputnik.
RT, Sputnik, even our video agency, roughly, all banned on YouTube.
Et merci à vous tous pour votre fidélité et votre soutien.
Попал сюда, меня, конечно, очень сильно город впечатлил. Везде розы. Я тогда не слышал эту легенду, что Донецк – город роз. Я был под впечатлением. Ну и люди, конечно, люди невероятные. Дончане, жители Донбасса, добрые, отзывчивые, сильные характером. Мы ехали, светофоры работали, все как бы, так сказать, огражданино. А сюда вот сворачиваешь, и вот это вот лично для меня, вот этот мост, это и есть вот эта тоненькая грань между войной и миром. Это же дорога на Авдеевку, кстати. То есть вот прямо, если ехать, то можно приехать прямо на позиции.
Авдеевку – это самое главное, чтобы они не били мирное население, Донецк, Макеевку. Отодвинуть их дальше от Донецка.
Ну, они там серьезно укрепились.
Ну, ничего страшного, разовьем.
Подарок в небо.
Арта работает, заходит, когда там мы тоже не начинаем. Пулеметы, когда начинают работать, они вообще голову не поднимают. Новые позиции копаем. Вот сейчас сегодня хотим заходить, еще 60 человек зайдем мы.
Все ради мира. Это неизбежно. Скоро придет на эту многострадальную землю.
Welcome back to the MO. I'm Manila Chan. Retired engineer Andrei Martyanov is back with us. Thanks for sticking around, Andrei. So, Donald Trump, he was mocked, right, for launching Space Force. But the Star Wars program actually existed during the Ronald Reagan years. And after the fall of the Soviet Union, that program went dormant. Now that Space Force is an official, actual branch of the U.S. military, is there cause for concern that space will also become militarized?
Yeah, it will be. And not only concern, it will become militarized. United States going to drive it. And they're going to drive it based on the fact that, as I already stated, you can quote me on them. The United States lost the arms race, especially in terms of their ground forces and in terms of their space. Oh, my gosh, it's a very interesting question. Do not forget that if not for Russia, International Space Station wouldn't exist because it was Russians. These were Russian and Roscosmos who were supporting it. So, and they definitely understand that there are some serious technologies in development, both in Russia and China. So, you know what? United States will decide to militarize space one way or another, thinking that it can, whatever, you know, geopolitical thinking behind it. But again, do not forget, it is all about making money. The whole, when I say why they lost the arms race, it's not only because of the inability, albeit their capability, engineering capability of the United States declined precipitously in the last 30 years, but it is also and primarily so because they are not interested in creating the effective weapons. They need expensive weapons to make money. And who needs effective weapon? You need very many ineffective weapons, and that's how you make money.
Yes, more volume of weapons, not necessarily precision or the effectiveness, is the key to profit. Quantity, not quality, as they say. Now, speaking of quality, Last year, you and I, we discussed precision arms, like the Kinjal missile and Russian next-gen ballistics. Are the U.S. and DOD simply trying to play catch-up with Russia in this technological arena?
Oh, they will not catch up anything in terms of such systems as 3M22 Zircon, which is both land attack and anti shipping missile. In terms of Kinjal, I also do not see anything comparable, because there was this program which was closed because it was very unsuccessful. And then we have the situation with whatever the name of it, Dark Eagle, Dark Shadow, I'm already lost in those terms, which was supposed to go online last year. And guess what? It failed, of course. And we're talking about this, what Trump called it, super duper missile. While they were trying to do this, they deployed even their basically mock-up, essentially, of this thing in Germany. And this is, they still cannot launch it, cannot properly really test it, because they want to come up with the, what is called the glide body, so hypersonic body. But you know what? Who knows? Maybe even in this year, they will not be able to place anything up there. And they certainly won't have any type of the weapons which are comparable to Zircon or to Kinjal, which is carried now not only by MiG-31s, okay, but it also carried by Su-34s. Which makes it absolutely horrifying weapon, because you cannot even track all of those Su-34s. Before that, they knew that when they looked at the satellite images, they knew their signal intelligence that, we have like a couple of MiG-31Ks in the air. That means what? They probably carry Kinjal, and they immediately tell Ukraine about it. Guess what? Now when you have those hundreds of Su-34s and practically, well, I don't know how many, but a large percentage of them can carry the same Kinjal, go figure out what is taking off and what it's going to be using. So there you go. And then, of course, you have the Tu-22M3M capable of carrying this. And Vladimir Putin today saw the four newest Tu-160 strategic bombers. So, it's a lost cause. Do not forget, people sometimes do not understand. United States didn't go through the stage phase of developing supersonic cruise missiles, be them anti-shipping or be them whatever the type, something like Russian KH or X-32 or X-22. They simply never developed it. They tried. It was worth gold, or its weight in gold. And they just abandoned it. So most American missiles, for example, which are anti-shipping, they are subsonic missiles.
Retired Soviet naval officer, now writer, analyst, and author Andrey Martyanov, thank you so much. And guys, be sure to check out his new book called Losing Military Supremacy from Clarity Press, and check out more of his work at his blog at smoothiex12.blogspot.com.
It was my privilege. Thank you very much for having me.
All right, that is going to do it for this episode of Modus Operandi, the show that digs deep into foreign policy and current affairs. I'm your host, Manila Chan. Thank you so much for tuning in. We'll see you again next time to figure out the MO.